You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering a question from Cindy in Australia. So lovely to hear from an Aussie on the other side of the globe. I've actually been in contact with several Aussies inquiring about the coaching program, and I learned they are 14 hours away from me. So my 7 p.m. is their next day, 9 a.m. So that's been so interesting to kind of know that we're on two separate days talking at the same time. So Cindy, thank you from Australia for this question. And her question is, can you please do a podcast on how you handle children wanting to shoot you and use the swords on you in the playroom? And boy, is that not everyone's question, because this happens to all of us. So yes, Cindy, thank you. I'm happy to answer that. And I've done episodes on aggression. Actually, the theme podcast this week was on aggression. But I think it's very important for us to keep several things in mind as far as aggressive play, because I've even done an episode on that. But specifically, I don't think I've addressed how do I handle it when children shoot me and use swords on me. And in the coaching program, my participants are actually watching some of my play session videos. So we've talked about this in the training group, because they've actually watched me get hit and shot and whacked and all of those things. And, you know, I joke with parents a lot that, you know, this job is not for the faint of heart. And I have been bruised. I've bled. I've gotten tears in my eyes a few times. I've, you know, been surprised at how badly something hurt. And, you know, you don't do this job without an acceptance of the casualties, I suppose, of the occupation. And so I always say, oh, occupational hazard, you know, I got a bruise from a whack with a sword, or, you know, I got shot with a dart and it hit me in the eye today. So yes, there's always going to be aggressive play. And Cindy, your question, how do I handle it? I'm happy to share that with you. So my first thought is, it's really important to understand how and when to set limits. And, you know, we talked about when we were discussing the four pillars early on in the podcast, we talked about when we set limits, how we set limits, you know, what's our litmus test for whether or not we're going to. And so general rules of thumb to keep in mind, there are three unwritten or unexpressed limits that we all keep in our head. So I have to be safe, you have to be safe, and the toys can't be broken on purpose. So those are just things that you need to keep in your minds as kind of the universal limits, even though they're not stated or spoken outwardly until needed. So that brings me to the next point. Limits are only needed when they're needed. So a child does not come into a play session and we don't go into all of the expectations and rules and limits, because until a child is violating one of those, I have to be safe, you have to be safe, and the toys can't be broken on purpose rules, then we don't tell them that those rules exist. And then finally, we have three questions that serve as a litmus test of whether or not we need to set a limit. So though, and I've discussed all of this in previous podcasts, but not probably all succinctly together. So if this sounds familiar, I think it'll kind of help you understand the big picture when all of this is discussed at one time versus in separate episodes. So we have, I have to be safe, you have to be safe, the toys can't be broken on purpose, limits are only needed when they're needed. And then finally, these three questions that we ask. So is this limit necessary? Extremely valuable to ask ourselves before we set it. Secondly, is this limit consistently enforceable? So parents that say, if you do that again, we're leaving the mall right now, but they have six more things they need to buy. Is that actually enforceable? And therefore, would it be enforceable the next time they're at the mall and the child is acting up, right? So along the same vein, if we set a limit in the playroom in this kind of arbitrary random way at one moment, is that going to consistently be enforceable across all limits? Because the limit is only given in that moment, but it carries beyond that moment. So in other words, if you set a limit, that is a limit forever. So it's not just for that particular moment, because kids need consistency. And when there's consistency in limits, there's stability in the relationship. And the stability in the relationship is what allows growth and healing to take place. So the trust and security come from knowing the expectations. So is this limit necessary? Can I consistently enforce this limit? And then third, if I allow this behavior to continue, am I still able to accept the child? So all three of those are kind of your test. And if any of those three, you end up thinking to yourself, okay, yes, I have to set this limit, then that's when you know it needs to be set. So that's my first thought in answer to your question, Cindy. You really need to understand the limit setting process, what that looks like, how you determine if you're going to set a limit, et cetera. So that's the basis of my answer. So I personally do not set limits on aggressive behavior, even when it's directed at me, because I believe that children need to be trusted. Children need to be given the opportunity and the space to self-regulate, and children need to learn empathy through a worldview. So if a child hits me too hard with a sword, I say, "Ooh, you were playing with the sword and it hit me and it hurt because you hit me hard." Notice that's not a limit. That is communicating my experience of what just happened. And therefore, if a child recognizes, "Oh, that was too much. That was too hard. I need to be more gentle," no limit is necessary because they came to that conclusion on their own. So as far as what happens if a child is shooting me or using swords on me, I assume the best, which brings me to the second point. We have to condition ourselves not to assume the worst and assume the best. And I'm watching my training participants session videos, as I mentioned, because they're seeing mine, but I'm also seeing theirs. And there were several early on that they immediately leapt in their minds to, this kid's going to hurt me. This kid's going to whack me. This kid's going to stab me. This is going to be a bad experience. And you could see in their tone, in their facial expression, in their interaction, in their body language, it shifted the whole session because they were assuming the worst. So we have to be very on guard and careful that we do not assume the worst, but we assume the best. So if a child gets a sword and lifts it up and acts like they're going to whack you with it, you assume that they do not have intentions to hurt you. Now, there will be times they do intend to hurt you, but you will be able to tell. So you have to observe and be really diligent to see what the motivation is. And I can't tell you, I would say 95 out of 100 times, a kid picks up a ball and acts like they're going to chuck it right at me, and they don't, and they laugh. Or they pick up the sword and act like they're going to hit me as hard as they can with it, and they don't, and they laugh. Or they load the crossbow and they point it right at me and they act like they're going to fire and they don't and they laugh. Why? Because they know that that is not appropriate behavior. And if you have the relationship with that child, they don't want to hurt you. Sometimes they do hurt you and sometimes you accidentally or inadvertently get hurt, but they do not have an innate desire to hurt you because they care about you. And even if they're dysregulated and sometimes they can't stop themselves, it doesn't mean that they have the intention to. So when you assume the best, it gives you more leeway to not react and let things unfold. Now, if the child actually starts to hit you, shoot at you, whatever, and it violates one of your limits, so that goes back to point one, right? My only limit is I am not for shooting in the face. So if a child wants to shoot, I have a crossbow which shoots ridiculously hard and fast. And I've thought so many times, I probably should not have that in there. But it is a huge therapeutic tool for kids because they are forced to shoot at something else if they use it. They know that I am not for shooting with the crossbow unless it is a Nerf dart. But I have suction arrows in there, and those are not for shooting at me anywhere on my body because it hurts too much. It comes out so fast that you can't stop but getting hurt, from getting hurt. So crossbow is I'm never for shooting at. Anything else that they can shoot with in there, including my Ultra Gun, the Nerf gun, the little wrist shooter thing, all of those types of things, they can shoot at me as much as they want. But my face is not for shooting at. And I use my notepad that I take notes on as my face shield. So I just hold it up in front of my face and then they fire away and that's no problem. So that is my limit specifically to shooting. For swords, I don't even really have a hard and fast rule of my limits with swords until a child hits me too hard with one. Although recently my two foam swords, you really can't hit me hard enough to hurt me with those, but I do have like a plastic sword that can hurt. So it really depends. And I have nunchucks that can hurt and I have handcuffs that can hurt. So I do have other things along the same vein where if the child actually hurts me the first time, that is when I let them know that it hurt me. Again, I assume the best. I give them an opportunity to change their behavior. And I only set a limit if they're unable or unwilling to change their behavior. So they hit me again. And then I then set a limit. Now, if you have not started at the beginning and you're not familiar with the limit setting process, number one, please go back and listen to every episode in order from one all the way up to now, because it is chronological and sequential, and you do kind of have to start at the beginning to get to where we are. However, as a refresher, we use ACT, right? So we acknowledge the feeling, we communicate the limit, we target the alternative. So I know you really want a sword fight with me. We're validating, right? But then we set a neutral limit. But I'm not for hitting that hard because it hurts. Then we offer alternatives. You can choose to fight me softer and not hit me so hard, or you can choose to fight Bobo and hit him as hard as you choose. Bobo is the bot bag if you're not familiar with that term. So notice there that I used ACT. That's what I would do in a moment where a child is actively hurting me and hitting me too hard. And I have absolutely no problem with telling the child that they've chosen not to sword fight with me anymore if they hurt me again. So ultimate limit comes in play if you've set that limit and then they violate the limit again. So ultimate limit becomes, I see you've chosen not to sword fight with me anymore because you chose to hurt me again, but you can choose to sword fight with Bobo now. No, I want to sword fight with you. I didn't mean to hurt you. I didn't hit you that hard. You feel like you didn't hit me that hard, but I got hurt again and you chose to hit me hard enough to hurt me even if you didn't mean to. So now you choose to fight with Bobo, but you can try to fight with me again next time. So notice that every single conversation regarding the behavior with the swords is neutral. It's calm. It's not dysregulated on our part. Look, I've been hurt so bad sometimes, like tears were in my eyes. I've been bleeding. I've been bruised. I mean, I've had skin broken. Trust me, there are times when I am not really in a good mental or emotional place. But our job is to accept how we feel, shelf it, table it for later, and we immediately go back to neutrality with the child. Why? We were talking about this tonight in the training group. Because if we react from our own emotion, it fractures the moment, it interferes with the relationship, and the child does not feel unconditionally loved and accepted, which is one of the core tenets of the Be With Attitudes. I'm here, I hear you, I understand, I care, and I delight in you. If you are angry at a child, if you are mad at them, if you're disappointed in them, if you're angry, if you are thinking, oh my gosh, I don't ever want to play with this kid again. He's so volatile. He's so, you know, difficult to handle. Any of that stuff that's going on, all warranted, I get it, but all of that is undermining the relationship. So no matter where you are with the behavior, you remain neutral, you remain calm, and you communicate unconditional positive regard and acceptance, because that's what the child-centered model is. So then my final thought is you really need to know yourself. And what I mean by that is there are some therapists that really thrive on aggressive kids, really thrive on that kind of active play, you know, the sword fighting and the handcuffs and the shooting and the battling and all of that. There are play therapists that love that. I personally kind of fall into that category. I have no issue with that kind of behavior in a playroom. But I've had therapists at my center that really have limited their aggressive toys, even though the acting out aggressive toys are one of the three main categories of toys that should be in a child-centered playroom. They had very limited options because they really did not like that kind of play. They really did not handle that kind of play well. So you really need to know yourself. Because if you can't handle getting shot, if you can't handle getting hit, if it is some kind of anchored thing for you, if it puts you in an emotional state, if you can't get yourself regulated again after something like that happens, just accept that, know who you are, and limit the availability of that kind of play, because it's better to not have it than to have it create some kind of havoc in the relationship where there's any kind of mistrust or any kind of fracture. Now, can you eliminate all of the acting out aggressive toys completely from your child-centered playroom? Absolutely not. But if you personally don't want to have a sword fight, then just don't have swords in there. If you absolutely don't want to get shot with Nerf darts, don't have a Nerf gun in there. Have a gun that just goes click, click, click when you pull the trigger. So there are ways to work around knowing yourself and what your limits are and what your capacity is for handling play. So in my room, I've got all kinds of acting out aggressive toys because I'm fine with that. But that's not true for everyone. So to kind of recap all of that, you have to understand the limit setting process and think through what that looks like and whether or not it's required and necessary. Second of all, assume the best. Believe that the child is capable of self-control, self-regulation, and you don't have to think, oh gosh, this kid's going to hurt me. And then third, know yourself, set your limits when needed, but know sometimes that it's better to just prevent the issue than it is to have to deal with it consistently if it's not handled appropriately. So Cindy, thank you so much. I'm so grateful for you writing in and asking that. I think that's helpful for all of us because there's always going to be an aggressive moment in a play session. So thank you so much for writing in. If you have a question, if you're wondering about something in your work, in your practice, in your playroom, shoot me an email, brenna@thekidcounselor.com. I love hearing from you. I'm so grateful that you spend time with me each week. Thank you very much for making this a part of your training and your growth and your skill acquisition as a child-centered play therapist. We constantly need to be working on being the best version of the therapist that we are. And so I'm grateful that I get to be a small part of that journey with you. I look forward to talking with you again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.